Chris Scalzo here with
Matt Howell.
On this episode of The First Run, Matt and I embed ourselves with Alex Garland's latest and final directorial effort, Civil War. Have you ever wondered what would happen in the United States if society finally broke down over which way the toilet paper is supposed to be hung? I think maybe it's about Chicago pizza not being real pizza. Something bad happened, I'm sure. Then there's going to be the crack shot rundown of the big releases on physical media, featuring your streaming and straight-to-DVD picks of the week, or maybe not. And then Matt and I are going to close out the big show with a round of What Are the Odds, featuring Tarantino, Frank Drebin, Phantom Menaces, and more. So let's start everything off, though, with a clip from Civil War.
Help you folks? Just looking for gas.
Got to look the fuel permit?
No, we're actually just passing through.
Can't help, sir.
Sir, if we pay.
I was never going to give it free.
Over the odds.
What's over the odds?
300. For half a tank and two cans?
300 buys you a sandwich. We got ham or cheese?
300 Canadian.
Okay.
Man, you imagine the day that the Canadian dollar is blowing ours out of the water. It's just embarrassing. Matt, what is Alex Garland's Civil War all about?
As Chris alluded to, something has happened. The country has fallen apart and broken into several factions, one of which is called the Western Forces of California and Texas. And they have been fighting in civil war amongst the four powers that now run the continent for an indeterminate amount of time. But the rebels are winning, and a seasoned war photographer, Lee, played by Kirsten Dunst, along with her companion, her mentor, and a young girl that who idolizes her and wants to do what she does, decide they're going to try and get to Washington, D.C. to get an interview with the president before Washington, D.C. falls.
Nice. So I'm looking at a map here on the Wikipedia. So the loyalist states are all in blue. You can look this up, folks. Which includes basically the New Englands and Nevada, New Mexico, Arizona, and then everything kind of above the Texas line. And then the red states are the Florida Alliance, right? Which is Oklahoma and Louisiana, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, that kind of thing, Kentucky. Actually, no, not Kentucky. I think it's, is that Iowa? Who knows? I was a C student in geography, Matt. And then the New People's Army is all in yellow here. And that basically includes is that Minnesota over to the left? Washington and Colorado, Idaho, the Dakotas, that kind of thing, right?
Okay.
Interesting. I didn't catch that other part of it. I knew there was the Florida Alliance part and that there was California and Texas, but I didn't realize that the West Coasty kind of center from the Rockies over, not even the Rockies. Yeah. Either way. A lot going on in Alex Garland's Civil War, Matt. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
So some people are complaining online of the fact that we never really find out what the core issue of the battle is, why Nick Offerman's president is in his third term. What is the initiating spark, Matt, that sets all of this off? And I'm of the mind that I don't think it matters. What are your thoughts on Civil War?
I'm in the complete opposite mind. I think it matters quite a bit. I'm really into speculative fiction, right? So I read a lot of science fiction. I read a lot of fantasy, horror, genre fiction. And you can tell immediately how much effort was put into something by just what is presented to you on the page or the screen. So to me, this immediately smacks of Alex Garland wrote a bunch of stuff down, made some scenes, thought they would be cool. And what he gave us doesn't have any depth to it, right? It's incredibly shallow. And I think I hear the chorus of people do just enjoy what's on the screen. It's you know, it's cool and it's a good acting and it looks good. And I guess, but if you're going to tell this kind of story with such real world kind of echoes and the kind of simmering of things that worst case scenario could to come, I think you could have told a lot more interesting stories if you had just taken pick something. Are there foreign powers backing some of these secessionist forces? Are, you know, is it like an insurgency, right? Like, is the U.S. fighting against insurgency? And you can make parallels to what we've done as U.S. imperialism. None of that is here. There is none of that. All it is you get a little bit of a Trump with the way Nick Offerman talks. You get the secessionists, who I'm not 100% sure we're supposed to be aligning with, committing a bunch of war crimes, obviously populated by Proud Boys, by guys running around in Hawaiian shirts. So I don't really understand what Alex Garland's point of this is. And I can hear what people say, but I wholeheartedly disagree with you. I think this movie, this type of movie and this type of story would have really, really benefited if he had put some effort into it, and he did not.
This is caca.
That's caca, Matt. Let me explain to you why. First off, I need to clarify a couple things with you. The Proud Boys are not in the Hawaiian shirts. Those are the Boogaloo Boys. All right? It's a different faction. They're not technically Proud Boys. All right? Now, they are kind of right-wing nutballs, but no. So I want to make sure everybody understands that.
Thank you,
sure
you for get correcting
your
me.
Reactionary right-wing nutsoids properly categorized.
Excuse me, right?
So, no, it's... The problem is that's not the story Alex Garland is telling us, Matt.
But that makes it a bad story. That doesn't make it a good story. That does not make it a good story. It is a bad story. Because there's no story. There's
no story. No, that's wrong. That is wrong. Because he's telling the story more about journalism and war and violence and the effect of it that it has on people. He's telling a story about how a country can break apart. Not why, but kind of what would happen potentially if that were to occur. He's talking about how there's a certain faction of people who want to ignore stuff.
So immediately, you're saying he's telling the story of how, not the why or the how, walk it back, just that it happened.
Yes, because the reasons why
are incredibly important.
Integral or integral to the story he's telling.
They're not integral.
He wants to show the different relationships and the different groups of people and how we would react if something like this were to occur. I think that he needs... The problem too, Matt, is that he's trying to make as apolitical a story as possible. Now, remember, if you listen to the show a couple of weeks ago, I had some issues with the way Alex Garland had talked about this film and what his general thought about politics is. I think a radical centrist kind of view of things, really. Mm-hmm. And it's entirely incorrect. But I think that he deftly dodges the political polarization part of all this, because it's got a little bit of everything for everybody, right? Like they have one sideline about how the FBI was eliminated. Well, depending on what period of time you're in, either the left or the right want the FBI eliminated. Hell, I could get on board with that now as a leftist, even though it's the right now that's very focused on the FBI being eliminated because it's been weaponized, air quotes, right? But he doesn't want to dive into all of that because he's going to alienate at least half of his audience. So it's now more a story about really journalism and how the journalists are chasing this high. They're being confronted potentially with their own mortality at one point, but they're also chasing this high of being involved and being embedded and being in the thick of it, being in the shit, right? And I love how he balances their almost kind of soul-crushing desire for scooped, how kind of there's this darkness inside of them that needs this rush. Then they're also balanced with this drive for the truth as well, and how that drive can potentially almost kill them. And I think also he's talking about how easily some folks can slip into authoritarianism. And I think that there's also a group of people who just want to ignore all the horrible evil that's happening and just move on and pretend like none of it's happening. So he's showing all of that. But the focus of this is journalism in war zones, I think, and how that impacts people. And that, for that story, you don't really need to know why.
Again, I completely disagree with you. I mean, also, to me, making a film that's centrist and for everybody and is apolitical and not polarizing, especially when you're telling this type of story with so much real world parallels that you kind of make these little wink and nods to, strikes me as either, like I said, lazy because you don't want to kind of delve into it, or cowardly, maybe at the worst, because you don't want to alienate the audience. If this is supposed to be art, it's not challenging you at all. It's trying to be something to everybody. And the story of journalism and the darkness of war photography and reporting and what it does to a person, you could tell that story and still have other points to make. Like, that's like the personal story. That's fine. But everything around it, that's kind of all this stuff hangs off of, he could have done the same thing by doing it in Europe. And like, I know nothing about European politics, so if you didn't tell me any background, it wouldn't matter to me, right? So this whole thing to me is just incredibly paper thin. And like, I think people are assigning anything that is being brought to this film, you're bringing to it as the audience. Alex Garland did not put it there. And I, you're saying the same thing. You're saying what you got out of it because of what you brought to the table, not because what Alex Garland is presenting on screen.
No, I don't think so. Because my point of this is that he's showing to everybody where things can end up, regardless of what your particular viewpoint is in the political spectrum. This is where we could end up. It's a stark reminder of how many of our societal social norms are all held into place because that's kind of just how we do things here and how quickly all of that can become undone. And I think it's important for as wide an audience as possible to see that all of this could shatter in an instant, potentially. And I don't think it's as important to say, well, A led us to B, led us to C, led us to D. I think it's more important to show if we kind of continue down the path we're going, regardless of what side you're on, this is where we could end up.
I disagree with everything about that statement, because if you're saying this is where we can end up, doesn't you think it's important to show how we got there? Or is it just because
we know? I think we can look around.
There's
around
not
right
enough.
Now.
There is not enough in that film to infer how we got there.
That's not,
again,
not in that film.
All you're showing is the end result. Yes. Yeah, war. Like this is where, like, Alex Garland, I read, like, he thinks he made Apocalypse Now. He thinks he saw Come and See. He made Come and See. It's not. Those are, you want to talk about effective war films? There is so much more out there. Like, this is, again, I just don't think he has anything to say. And I think he's hiding it in great performances, in cool set pieces. And again, I wish I liked this film more than I did, but I don't. And, you know, I mean, if you got something out of it as a viewer, you know, whether that's you or Chris or anybody else out there, I'm happy for you. But don't think because I didn't like it that I didn't get it. I got it. It's just that the message and what's up there is a reflecting pool. It's not like you step into it and it's there's nothing there.
I just think that's not the story he's telling. I appreciate that. You look at that as a failure. I look at more as just a as I said, it's a story about journalism and the impact of war and violence on people and how we all kind of treat it, how we all react to it. I don't think it's as important to find out the reason why we're here. Sometimes it's just as effective to be dropped right into the middle of something and trying to find your way through it. And I had no issues with that. I think technically, and I think maybe you and I will be on board with this, technically the film is very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's shot gorgeously. You have these wide open vistas at times, and then we have these close-ups, these really horrible, cold close-ups, particularly with Kirsten Dunst and some of the others, you know, where he shoots them isolated a lot, or maybe just two people, four together. It's just, it's visually, it's a very striking film. The sound design as well. I think we have an early contender for Oscar nomination for sound design in the film. Mm-hmm. I saw this in an IMAX screening while I was at a work trip in San Antonio. Now, I have some major problems with the theater in San Antonio I went to. I didn't realize how spoiled I was here in Tampa. Mm-hmm. But still, the sound design in this is incredible. I think Garland does a fantastic job of dropping you into these battles where you do feel like you're surrounded, like you're there. And I think it has a consistent nonstop presence on you as you're working your way through with this embedded, well, not even, they're not even embedded really, right? This group of reporters trying to get through to DC and all the havoc and chaos that they encounter all along the way. You really feel like you're part of it. It's a powerful, visceral, moving experience. It was for me, at least, Matt. Are we in agreement on the technical aspects of the film?
Yeah. Again, I think technically it looks great. I think he is obviously a director that knows his way around an action set piece. I think those are thrilling. They're exciting to watch. They kind of suck you in. And like I said, I think the performances are good to great. America's Sweetheart, Jesse Plemons delivers in the, 5 minutes he's on screen.
Mm-hmm.
So
terrifying scene, it looks in this. I remember watching the first trailer thinking, all right, this looks all right. And I was a little weary about how Garland was going to go with this film. Clearly for me, it worked. But that scene with Plemons works even better in the full experience than it did. I remember too thinking the trailer that saved the trailer was Plemons for me. And then in here, it's just even more chilling.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, Jesse Plemons is great. I guess I just wish all of that was in service to a better film.
Man, so I'm the entire time, Matt, I'm on the edge of my seat, terrified about what's going to happen next. And yeah, he just didn't.
I mean, I got sucked in by the battle scenes. You know, I got sucked in by the kind of depressing and disturbing images. But at the end of it, I kind of sat there and I thought to myself, is that it? Is that what I was excited for? And I was disappointed.
I want to give some praise to Kirsten Dunst as well. I think Matt will agree with me on this as hardened reporter, or she's photographer, I should say. The occasional cracks of humanity and even joy she experiences makes her arc even more devastating, I think. The young woman who, Kaylee Spaney, who's having quite a moment. She's in, I think, 2 or 3 films this year. Who plays kind of the aspiring young photographer who takes her under her wing, even against her own, I guess, thoughts to even to do so. She's really well good in this, as well as Wegner Mora, who plays a journalist who's with him, who desperately wants to interview the president before the Capitol falls. And really all top shelf performances. And of course, Stephen McKinley Henderson is one of those guys. Right. You'll see, when you see him, oh yeah, I know that guy. He played the guy in Dune who would show his white eyeballs while he calculated stuff.
The human commuter. He's a mentat.
Sure. Whatever you say, nerd. And yeah. So just universal great stuff, Matt. For me, it is now, I think, so far my favorite film of the year. Civil War is getting an A from me.
Wow. I will say this, Chris. I really enjoy it when we disagree so wildly, because at least it makes for an interesting discussion. Everybody can hear Chris tell me I'm wrong after making reasoned opinions about why I feel the way I do.
I think why I struggle with it is because it's one of those things where it's not so much we disagree on like, oh, that performance was crap, or I didn't, it's weird, because why I struggle with it is you're upset with the thing that I think is done on purpose and works. Well, it's just like I don't know. It's just, it's a choice. Go ahead.
I agree with you that it's done on purpose. I just don't think it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway,
please.
I need at least really,
some in the C category for me here. I'm going to very upset.
I really want to give this a D plus, but I'm going to give it a C minus, because it looks good. The action scenes are great. It's well directed, and these performances, again, have a lot of great performances in it. But honestly, giving it a C minus is a struggle for me.
That is painful for me, because I like what he did with Men, but I felt that was all a bit much, right? And I felt like Garland is back in the driver's seat now.
Right.
In a fantastic film, and I'm kind of sad that he's supposedly going to step away from directing. He's still going to write.
Yeah.
But he says he doesn't think he wants to direct anymore. And it's just really disappointing after seeing this thing. Did I talk about the needle drops on this? So there's some top shelf needle drops in this film, as well as I think the score is very effective. I think he interweaves the two perfectly. We get the score when we need it. There's no music when we don't need it.
Yeah.
And then there's these songs that play in perfect, that are just placed perfectly in the film, like Rock Attack USA. I love that song and to hear that. I don't think I've ever heard that in a film before. So it just all great stuff. And then I think finally, I want to give a hearty fuck you to the licensing of some of the footage from fascist provocateur Andy No. At the very end of the film, they credit him. I guess they licensed some footage from him, which is interesting because he's been known to steal footage from other... I don't even want to call him a reporter. If you're not familiar with Andy No, just Google him. He's a guy who would go around basically Antifa rallies and stuff, Matt, and he would record stuff, and then he would find out people's names, and he would then tell... That's what I... Supposedly, he would then give the names of these people to the Proud Boys and two other groups to let them know who they were and where they were going to be. Mm-hmm. And he is just the guy's a piece of shit. And one of my favorite things about him is that he developed an English accent about 3 years ago before previously not having one.
Gotcha.
So I love that little tidbit. It tells you exactly all you need to know about who Andy Nail is. I don't blame Garland for that. I think all the footage that they show kind of in the beginning of the film, mm-hmm. as kind of society is crumbling, a lot of it I think is from air quotes from No.
Okay.
So just an all-around bad guy. Good times, folks. If you had a chance to see Civil War, which is currently playing in theaters, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Shoot us an email at feedback@thefirstrun.com. Breaks my heart a little bit, Matt. Breaks my heart.
It's bound to happen sooner or later.
What's coming up in physical media this upcoming Tuesday? That is, 23rd? We'll say that. April 23rd. This is being released in 4K. From what I understand, the transfer is pretty good. So if you're a fan of this film, you may want to pick it up.
So, you got family connections down in Southie, right? Through your father? Why don't you tell us about your Uncle Jackie?
He was a carpet layer for Jordan Marsh.
Uncle Jackie was a small-time bookie who attended bar at the Vets in Somerville. He got popped by Nicastro in 95. We found his body out by the airport.
That's right. I remember his funeral.
Good. Closed casket?
That's right.
So, tell anybody up at Deerfield? That is before you got kicked out for wailing on a gym teacher with a folding chair. You had an Uncle Meta's demise like that. I got a question. How fucked up are you?
That's right, man. Being released in 4K this upcoming Tuesday is The Departed. You can get a steelbook version of that as well. Brand new 4K remaster of the film, HDR presentation, a feature on the making of it, and 9 additional scenes with an introduction by Marty. Would you upgrade The Departed to 4K? Do you have it on physical media in any capacity yet?
I don't think I do. So yeah, I would definitely upgrade it. Even if I had it on Blu-ray, I probably would if the price was right.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? If it gets down to maybe $10, I would. But my Blu-ray, I think, is pretty good. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not the biggest fan of The Departed. I think it's good, but it's, I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's a collection of really great scenes. I think part of it, too, is that everybody like raves about Nicholson in the film. His mm-hmm. performance kind of bothers me. I don't know what it is. I don't care for it.
Yeah, I think The Departed is good. I think The Departed is fun. It's nowhere near like top shelf Scorsese, like a lot of people say.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen Infernal Affairs, there's a Japanese film, there's a Korean that the film's based on. Check that out. It is fantastic. And Criterion has a set. There's 3 of them. You can buy it as a little trilogy. I have it. So though I haven't watched parts 2 or 3 yet, of course. All right, what's coming up as well, Matt? You ready for, let's do a little counting of downing, shall we? Let me get my little thing up here. And then let's play a little this thing for Matt because he likes it so much.
Number 5.
I'm going to go with Touch. I don't know how to say this. Cinematograph. This is the artsy line from Vinegar Syndrome.
Okay.
Kind of their version of Criterion. Is putting out a 5K limited edition of Touch, the written and directed by Paul Schrader, based on the Elmore Leonard novel, featuring Bridget Fonda, Christopher Walken, Skeet Ulrich, Tom Arnold, Gina Gershon, and Breckin Meyer. With the discovery of Juvenile, a miracle healer, evangelist turned RV dealer, Bill Hill, envisions riches. Hill manages to snare Juvenile with the help of a former associate, Lan Faulkner. However, Hill's plans for book deals and TV talk show hits a snag when Lynn falls for Juvenile and has second thoughts about exploiting him. I have never seen Touch. Supposedly, people really like it. I wasn't even aware of the film's existence. But you can pick that up. Coming up from Kino Lorber, Matt, I pre-ordered this because Amazon had it for like $14. And I haven't seen it, but I'm all excited to check it out.
Four!
Number four is Tarkovsky's Nostalgia, a 4K release from Kino. At a spa in a Tuscan Hills, a Russian poet and musicologist researching the life of 18th century composer meets a mysterious man who's convinced that the end of the world is nigh. It's a brand new 4K restoration from OCN, audio commentary by film historian Daniel Bird, an interview with the director of photography Giuseppe Lanci, and A Voyage in Time, a 1983 behind-the-scenes documentary. Both of those last two things are only available on the Blu-ray that accompanies the disc. So, yeah, I've never seen it, but it's Tarkovsky, and I'm trying to see more of his films. And I was like, $15 for a Kino Lorber Blu-ray, a 4K disc? I'll just pull the trigger, and we'll gamble on that one. Next up.
Can you hit it from there?
I got three shots. That's enough.
Can't argue with a confident man.
That's right. We got a new number three, Matt. Fantastic. You know what film that's from?
I don't. What is that from?
Assault on Precinct 13.
Oh, nice.
The Beekeeper is being released in 4K and in Blu-ray. This is a Jason Statham action film by David Ayer that took the world by storm. Includes a HDR presentation of the film on Dolby Atmos audio track, and that's all I could find for The Beekeeper. And then where are we? Three? No, we're on two now, aren't we?
Looks like we're shy one horse.
You brought too many.
Criterion is putting out I Am Cuba, both a landmark of radical political cinema, Matt, and one of the most visually ravishing films ever made. This legendary hymn to revolution shimmers across the screen like a fever dream of rebellion. The result of an extraordinarily ambitious collaboration between the Soviet and Cuban film industries. Four vignettes about the lives of Cuban people set during a pre-revolutionary era, I should say. A brand new 4K restoration includes a 2004 documentary in the making of the film called I Am Cuba. Interview from 2003 with our good buddy Marty Scorsese. And more included on that one. And then, what should I do, Matt? Anyway, let's give you the number. There can be only one! You know, I'm going to go Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 2. I didn't know it was just a three-parter, but it's the latest animated film from the DC Studios. It includes a featurette called Voices in Crisis, another called The Bat Family, The Multiverse, and a sneak peek of Part 3. Because you know what else is coming out in Blu-ray? Driveway Dolls. But I don't know if I can recommend it because I was really disappointed with that one.
Yeah. I don't blame you. I was disappointed about it, too.
Other 4K releases, Shout Factory is putting out Rolling Thunder. Brand new 4K restoration of that from the original camera negative. This is kind of a cult classic. Major Charles Rain comes back from the war, Matt. He's given a number of gifts from his hometown because he was a war hero. Some greedy thugs decide they want to steal a number of silver dollars from him. In the process, they also manage to kill his wife and son and destroy his hand. The Major wants revenge, so he enlists the help of his war buddy Johnny to meet the thugs in a final showdown. Brand new interviews and brand new audio commentary on Shout's disc. Also another 4K release, Matt, is Steel Magnolias. You get a brand new 4K restoration of that, Dolby Vision, as well as the new Dolby Atmos track. And they included the 1990 TV pilot for Steel Magnolias is on this. And an archival director's commentary and 10 deleted scenes. And then one of the most notorious films from Joltaro Giacopetti and Franco Prosperi of the Mondo Cain fame, the Goodbye Uncle Tom. Matt, the film considered too shocking for the world. The Detroit Chronicle hailed it as a graphic, moving, nerve-paralyzing film. And it's finally being released, a brand new 4K restoration. And you can see a whole bunch of stuff with it. A lot of special features, including this feature, including a feature-length documentary. And there's a fourth disc, which includes the soundtrack. So, yeah. You can pick that one up, Matt. It's a basically an exploitation film and an unprecedented cry of black anguish and rage. I've never seen Goodbye, Uncle Tom. Don't know if I ever will. But okay. If you're a big fan of exploitation, this may be the film for you. And then now, Matt, quick little announcement. We're going to be retiring the Straight to DVD Pick of the Week. Oh. And we're bringing in now the Viper Video Pick of the Week because I want to help promote my local Viper Video Store. And you know what? Well, you're not going to really see a difference. We're just going to get a submission from Viper Video here in Tampa. In fact, you can check them out at www.vipervideotampa.com. And they actually recommended Necrophiles. I talked about it the other week that I was going to watch it. I watched it. A cannibal rapist rises from the grave as a flesh-eating zombie sex maniac. Two Seattle cops, a satanic cult, and a flying demon fetus try to stop the lust-crazed ghoul before he can kill again. Matt, a VHS classic shot like on VHS, and it is really, really bad. Like, I don't even know if I can say entertainingly bad. I did laugh out loud a couple times, especially when the zombie demon baby comes to life and flies around going, "Wee!" as it attacks people. And then the two cops, played by two people who clearly are not actors in any capacity. It is something. I'll say that. It is quite the experience. So you can pick that up right now at ViperVideoTampa.com. Matt, what should we be streaming this week?
Well, I'm going to forego our film focus and recommend a new series on Amazon Prime, Fallout, starring a whole bunch of people, including the always wonderful Walton Goggins, about a post-apocalyptic futuristic society where a series of people live in underground vaults, and one of them has to go to the unexplored surface to find her missing father. And it is a lot of fun. If you've played the games, it's very well within the spirit of the games. It's got all the kind of 50s retro futurism look of this, you know, near future society that, you know, was destroyed by a series of A-bombs. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Nice. I'll have to add it to the list. But know what I watched on my flight? I don't know if this does the film justice, and I apologize to the director, Paul Andrew Williams. I've wanted to see this film for a while, and I couldn't get a hold of it anywhere. So I bought it digitally when it was $5. Now it turns out it's on Amazon Prime now, so you can check it out. But it's a British film, a crime film called Bull. This guy, he's basically an enforcer for a mob guy, and he's been missing for 10 years. And he shows up to take out the people who double-crossed him. And it is exceptionally violent. But if you like kind of violent crime, British crime thrillers, I think you'll get on board with this one. Though the ending of it, I'm not sure about yet. I'm still on the fence about it. It takes a turn that I don't know if it sells, that it sets up enough for. Though as the film progresses, you start to think, I wonder if, and then when that comes, I'm like, all right. Maybe. Yeah, okay. And the rest of the first two thirds of it though are just nice crack shot kind of, lightning kind of filmmaking. So you may want to check it out. Matt, let's talk about a few odds making, right? Let's play a round of what are the odds. This is our Vegas based though. Vegas. We'll say what, you want to go to Atlantic City maybe, or Mohegan Sun, Foxwoods? Are you a Mohegan or a Foxwoods guy?
I'm more of a Mohegan guy. I think it's a more interesting building. But let's go Biloxi. This feels like a riverboat kind of thing in Biloxi, Mississippi.
Ooh, I like that much more. Let's play a round of what are the odds.
So do you think of something to say?
Actually, I did. However, you seem like a really nice person, and I don't want to offend you.
Doesn't sound like the usual mindless, boring, getting to know you chit-chat. This sounds like you actually have something to say.
Well, I do. But you have to promise not to be offended.
No. You can't promise something like that. I have no idea what you're going to ask me. So you can go ahead and ask me what you're going to ask me. And my natural response could be to get offended. Then through no fault of my own, I would have broken my promise.
Let's just forget it.
That's an impossibility. Trying to forget anything as intriguing as this would be an exercise in futility.
Is that a fact?
And besides, isn't it more exciting when you don't have permission?
All right. Well, here goes. What did you think about what happened to Antoine?
Who's Antoine?
Tony Rocky Horror. You know him.
He fell out of a window.
Well, that is one way to say it. Another way to say it would be that he was thrown out. Another way would be was he was thrown out by Marcellus. And yet even another way is to say he was thrown out of a window by Marcellus because of you.
So that, of course, is a clip from Pulp Fiction. Matt, your first what are the odds? Quentin Tarantino has dropped The Film Critic as his last film. It just came out that he's no longer going to move forward with that film. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I'm kind of partially relieved by that. Though I'm sure it would have been interesting and I would have liked it. I don't know. I want something bigger.
Right.
To be his last film. Though granted, I have no idea what the film was going to be about, so maybe it would have been some gigantic film. So I'm trying to think, like, what kind of film has he not made yet that I'd want to see? So here's what I came up with, and I'm curious what your thoughts is, and I'd like to hear what you would like for him to make. Okay. What are the odds that QT's last film will be a spy thriller?
I would say 30%, because I don't feel like it's a genre that he has a lot of love for. Because it hasn't seen, you don't see the DNA of it in a lot of other of his other films.
See, now the reason why I say that, because he has said in the past that he would like to make a James Bond film.
Okay.
But he would want to make it in black and white and set it in the 50s. Like, okay. Actually do like old school classic, like Ian Fleming, James Bond.
Right.
And I've always kind of wanted to see what that would be like.
Right.
Now, the odds that he's going to do that, I'm with you. I don't think it's very high. I'm going to go 28% Price is Right rules, so I don't, you know, just in case. But still, if it was my call, that's what I want. I did think about doing a Kill Bill 3.
Yeah.
But in the end, I don't know. I'd like to see what would happen. And we don't even have anything set for James Bond. And you know what? They want to do a reboot. What perfect way to do a reboot than to do a one-off thing?
Mm-hmm.
So give it to QT, make his 50s set Bond film, and then run with it. I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah, but Barbara Broccoli's not cool. Like, she's not cool. She couldn't bear to do that.
No, probably not. But it would be, just as a one-off, to do a full reset, I think it would be fantastic.
See, so I think, so what has he talked about? He talked about a Kill Bill 3 where Vivica Fox's daughter comes after Uma Thurman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which could be cool. I'm always down for more Kill Bill because I love Kill Bill. He's talked about a Star Trek film, which I don't think will happen, but I would love to see him do a science fiction film because he hasn't done one. And while you could argue like Hateful Eight is his horror film.
Yeah, that's what I would say to that, yeah. Death Proof.
Well, that's true. That is true. So I would still like to see him do like a cheesy 80s, 70s slasher type thing. I mean, and granted, that's low-hanging fruit, but it seems like it would be so much fun.
It would be. The thing I'd want the least is like an 80s sex comedy.
Oh yeah, that'd be bad.
I would not want to see that.
Can Tarantino pull off a comedy? It doesn't seem like it would. He would be able to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've seen a couple westerns, so that's out of the gate. That's gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I like maybe a big sci-fi film might be kind of fun. Or a horror film. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like a horror film, like maybe it's a throwback to like 50s, 60s monster movies, right? Or, you know, split the difference. It's an alien monster movie like The Blob or something like that. Something in that kind of vein.
I think just with his dialogue abilities, I think if I had to give you something that was well over 50%, I would want a film noir out of him.
Oh, that would be nice. That would be pretty awesome.
Like maybe a remake of, it doesn't have to be a remake, but like his version of Out of the Past.
Yeah.
I don't know who the current day Robert Mitchum would be, but something like that. I think maybe that's what we should do, that he should do some kind of classic film noir would be with his dialogue skills, I think would be fantastic.
Yeah. Like a hard boiled detective, you know, gumshoe thing. Like that would be pretty badass. Okay, that's my first choice. Sci-fi second, gumshoe film, like film noir, detective film would be amazing.
Yeah. All right, good. I'm glad we settled that. We'll give him a call.
We did. Yeah, we did. We'll send him an email. He's a busy man. He's not going to call.
That's true.
All right. Well, much to the dismay of Park City, Utah, Sundance has put out feelers to accept bids to go somewhere else.
Really?
Outside of Park City, Utah. They're on contract until 2026, and Park City can still, bid and, put their name into the hat, but they've put stuff out there for people to give them proposals. So what are the odds 2027 Sundance will be somewhere else?
I'm trying to think where they would go. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like a Portland or a Seattle.
Yeah.
Chicago might be interesting. I don't think they'd come here to Florida.
New Orleans? I don't know
if Redford would want to do something like that. What's that?
New Orleans?
Maybe, but I don't know, man. Louisiana is in a real rough shape right now.
I know.
In regards to every, it goes really, it's really under the radar. But if you've been following what's been happening in Louisiana, I mean, you think Florida is bad in regards to like a Christo-fascist state?
Is it?
Louisiana is blowing it out of the water. Like, I don't know why it runs, why it's under the radar so much, but the shit that they're doing in that state is terrifying.
Really? I haven't, you're right, I haven't seen that. I just love New Orleans. It's such a cool city. It's got such a cool vibe. Sure. It's got to be, you know, with its voodoo and all that kind of stuff, a holdout of weirdness. So I was just thinking something like that.
That would be good.
Although I could see them being doing something, I don't know if it's too much sticking to the kind of resort town, but if maybe they do something like Aspen, kind of seems bougie, or Vail, something like that. I mean, I could, if they didn't want to go too far off the path, but get away from the Mormons and the kind of that stuff, but still stay kind of bougie, you know, with a resort town kind of thing.
Whatever, like a big one too. What would be one in Colorado? Like, I could see that too.
Well, like Aspen or
Vail. That's right, Aspen, Colorado. Hello. Yeah. See, I told you earlier in the show, I'm a C student in geography. I don't. Yeah, so odds that happens, I will go 58%. I'll say there's a better than no chance that they do that. I think they will eventually end up again there, maybe, in Utah. But I'd say, yeah, I think maybe we want to take it on the road a bit.
Yeah. I'm going to go a little higher. I'm going to say it's going to be a 60% chance because my sister-in-law is from Park City. And that's where my brother and her, when they met, that's where they were living. Park City is a small place. And like, I can only imagine what it's like when it gets full of people for Sundance. So I can see, you know, Sundance moving. Granted, they're losing some of the charm maybe, but they could be getting a lot more in capacity and services and things like that.
I wonder what would happen too, though, because I bet you that town, city, is it even big enough to be a city? They must rely on that festival so much for the life.
It's a big deal. Now it's also a resort town, so there's a lot of skiing in the winter, so stuff they don't, like
it's
that.
Not just
Yeah.
So I could say that maybe Redford and the crew would kind of take pity on that if they got a nice enough deal. I don't think Redford's in this for the money. I don't think it's more like whoever gives us the biggest coin is what's going to get it.
Right.
Get us, you know? So.
Yeah. But I think, you know, at the same token, if he's not in it for the money, you know, like I said, it can't handle the influx of people. So like, you know, if you go someplace that's bigger, that's got more hotels, it's got more restaurants, that's got more services, and it makes it more available to more people, I could see him doing that as well.
Yeah, no, that's true. All right, Matt. What are the odds that the Liam Neeson's Naked Gun reboot is not just going to be good, it's going to be hilarious? It's directed by, and I think co-written by, Akiva Schaffer.
Okay.
And you Liam Neeson is Drebin, and Pamela Anderson just signed on for an unspecified role.
I'm weirdly optimistic. I'm bullish on this. I'm going to say it's got a 55% chance. I don't think it's great because I have never really seen a lot of the funny side of Liam Neeson, but I feel like instead of being kind of wacky and over the top and spoofy, I feel like he would make a good straight man for kind of everything going on around him as a fish out of water. So I think that could work. And I'm going to say that it has the potential to be pretty good at 55%.
All right. I'm actually right with you. I'm leaning more about 63.
Okay.
I think that because, you know, whole numbers like that are for cowards. I'm at 63 because, I still haven't seen what Hot Rod is it, but I loved Popstar. I thought Popstar was hilarious.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious to see that. And I love the idea of Liam Neeson. I don't know if against type is the right way to say that because I know he can be funny because I saw him in Extras, that Ricky Gervais show, and he was absolutely hilarious in that. So I think there's a very good chance it's going to be, could be a lot of fun. Now, the problem is, Naked Gun series, that's some legendary classic comedy. Police Squad 2, have you ever seen the show? I'm not sure if it's available anywhere. I'm sure it's on one of the streaming channels somewhere. It only ran for about, what, 6 episodes? But each one of those are absolutely hilarious. So you should check out Police Squad, the show itself, too. So, but yeah, I'm pretty confident that we may have something really fun in that film.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty good. Now, and I will say, while Popstar is much better, Hot Rod is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, temper your expectations a little bit, but you'll have a good time watching it. Ian McShane is a delight in that film. All right. So, we're big fans of Edgar Wright, you and me. And we really like most, if many, of his films. And I think we thought Last Night in Soho was okay, but we were kind of let down by it. I think it kind of missed the mark for us. So, what are the odds that Edgar Wright's new adaption of The Running Man, starring newly signed Glenn Powell, is going to bring us back to top-tier Edgar Wright?
All right, I'm going to be honest with you. I've been thinking about this. I'm not sure how on board I am with Glenn Powell. He seems like a nice enough guy.
Right.
He's pretty fun in Maverick.
Right.
We'll have to see what happens with Linklater's Hitman that's coming out, what, in a month or so?
Sure.
But I'm not entirely sold on Powell. Now, I haven't seen the film with him and Sydney Sweeney. Was it Anyone But You or something like that? I can't remember what that thing's called.
Yeah, right.
But I'm not, I don't know. So, what's your question again? What are the odds that what?
What are the odds that...
Oh, that's a return to form for Edgar Wright.
Right.
So it's Running Man. See, here's the thing. Another little secret for you folks. Running Man's not a very good film. Mm-mm. It's not. The only thing reason why that thing works is because Arnold's in top form.
Mm-hmm.
Doing what Arnie does best. And I don't... Has he made anything that's like a straight... Edgar Wright, that's Baby Driver, I guess? It's a straight action film for the most part with some humorous elements, right?
That is pretty... I mean, Hot Fuzz is pretty action-y.
Yeah, but that thing is winking at you the whole time. Like that
I understand, but he can pull off an action scene. I'm talking about
like a straightforward, like, you know, action film. Or a straightforward science fiction film. He hasn't done that. Everything has been with satirical elements to the genre that he's making. Well, except Last Night in Soho.
Well, and I would say Baby Driver as well. I mean, granted, it's kind of like a mashup between a heist film, action film, crime film, and a musical. But I don't think it's really winking at you at any point.
Yeah, and we both really like Baby Driver, though. It is a cursed film.
I choose to ignore all the curses and just enjoy the film.
Yeah, I'm going to go, I'm not, again, I just got a lot of things working against me with this. Right. So I'm going to say, but it's Edgar Wright. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to say 68%.
68%, wow. Okay. Yeah, so since whole numbers are for cowards, I'm going to say 57%. Because here's the thing. I think Glenn Powell as the lead, as Ben Richards, is a mistake. Everything I've seen Glenn Powell in, what he gets by on is this kind of shit-eating, smarmy charm, right? That's kind of like what he does in all the movies I've seen him in, right? I think if they had hired him to play the Richard Dawson character, I would have been on board. If he was the game show host Killian, I think he could have done that perfectly.
And then who would be Schwarzenegger? Would be Cena or something?
Yeah, you know what? Though I was kind of going through the list of wrestlers in my head, but I feel like they should be all the stalkers. Like we should have The Rock. The Rock would never do it, but I mean, if you had like The Rock and Dave Bautista and John Cena, that would be amazing if they were all the stalkers. So I don't know, Keanu maybe. I mean, granted, he's getting old, he's getting up there, but. I don't know who I would cast as Ben Richards. I can think of everybody around it. I just don't know who the lead would be.
Yeah. No, I think that's accurate. All right, Matt, here's my last one for you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Coming out as a celebration for the May the 4th, the 25th anniversary, if you want to feel old, of Star Wars The Phantom Menace is going back into theaters.
Great.
What are the odds that Matt goes to see The Phantom Menace in the theaters? Now, I want to point out, I just did a quick little look. As of this moment at AMC, no IMAX, no Dolby.
Right. So I can tell you definitively that the odds are 0%. I hate that film. I hate it so much. And it drives me up the wall. that there's a subsect of prequel apologists that like try and tell you that they're as good, if not better, than the original films, which is just insane to me. They're one of the greatest cinematic disappointments of my life was watching that film.
I can't remember. I know we've talked about this. Will we go prequels or sequels?
But see, and that's the thing. That last one is so bad. It's so bad. And Rian Johnson's film is good, but when you take it as like part of a story, it makes no sense. And it just like derailed the whole damn thing. Christ, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, because I can't even watch The Force Awakens now without realizing where this thing ends up. And it's so bad. Like, I just can't do it. But at the same time, I can't subject myself to The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, which are awful. I mean, Revenge of the Sith has its moments, I guess, but that's a tough one, Chris. I guess I still go sequels because then I can just watch Rian Johnson's film and just ignore, just think it's some kind of weird standalone where nothing else happened before or after it.
That's probably a good idea. Yeah, I'm, for me, what are the odds that I go see it? It's more than zero.
Okay.
I would say maybe 20%.
Okay.
It might be kind of fun just to see that film in the theater again. I don't hate it the way Matt does.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some interesting things in it. I like Darth Maul in it a lot. I think, I have a soft spot because that was out when I was running the movie theater. It was when it came out. In fact, I got hired like 3 weeks before that.
Okay.
So I have a little bit of sentimental love because of that experience. But yeah, I don't have the disdain for it that Matt does. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars was something that in my younger, you know, my kiddom, preteens, teens, was a fandom that I was really into. And I kind of got away from it as I went to college and got older in high school. But when it came out, I was so excited. I was ready to see more. And it's like the Patton Oswalt skit, like in the very early stand-up, where George Lucas is sitting up there and, oh yeah, we're going to talk about Darth Vader, the background of Darth Vader, but you're going to get to see him as a little kid. Like, who gives a shit? Like, oh, you're going to see Boba Fett as a little kid and you're going to have weirdly racist caricatures and the whole plot revolves around trade agreements? Like, come on. Terrible.
Okay. All right, you got one more for us?
Actually, I don't, because mine was QT related as well. But we're running long. It's late and you've had a long week, so I think it's a good place to shut it down.
All right, fair enough. Did you hear the news about Target exiting physical media by 2025 completely?
Oh, no, I did
not.
Even
online?
No, I did not hear that.
Yeah, that was going to be one of mine. What are the over-under $25 for a Blu-ray going forward? Because there's not going to be any competition anymore. It's going to be Amazon, Walmart, and your boutique studios. That's it.
Well, Best Buy, you can still buy them online, right?
Yeah, but I'm sure they're going to exit that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And their prices are ridiculous because you got to be a member of their club to get even a remotely like $2 off.
Well, here's the thing. It'll do its death knell. It may go underground for a little bit, but then it'll make a resurgence like vinyl because, you know, it's the only way you can really watch something truly 4K, right? And as the technology continues to improve, there's going to be a subset. So either they're going to create, maybe they'll stay really niche, but they'll give you a lot to go with it that somebody like you or I may really like. Or, you know, you'll have to just kind of be on top of it. Like it'll be high, high, high. And then as they kind of dwindle down and they're not going to be restocking, it'll go like slash fire sale. And that's when you buy kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm just upset, you know, because I think the days of like the $8 Blu-ray or the $14, $15 4K are basically almost over at this point. You're still going to have sales and stuff, but I have that Indiana Jones film in my, you know, list on Amazon. I check it basically every day and it's on sale right now for $25.
Mm-hmm.
It's very frustrating. It's disappointing. All right, folks, that's going to be, what are the odds? What percentages would you give to some of these? Shoot us an email at feedback@thefirstrun.com. We would love to hear from you. Matt, what's coming up next week on the big show?
Well, we're checking out the action horror film Abigail, which I thought looked dumb, but I guess I'm hearing that might be good. So I'm actually kind of curious to see it now. And then we get to, of course, I'm super happy, back to Zack Snyder's world with Rebel Moon 2. I cannot wait to revisit it.
I think the four-hour version of the first one's supposed to be coming out at the same day, right? Are you going to watch that one, too?
I guess I have to. I got to have to make a six-hour day, a six, seven-hour day of just watching Zack Snyder.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm planning on doing that. I may just see. And I think I read online that he plans to make, like, six of these films, and then he wants to do director's cuts of each one of them as well, and it's just...
See, this is what the Snyder Cut has wrought, internet. I mean, granted, it was much better than what we had initially got, but now it's gone to his head.
And he wants to do another alternate director's cut of Sucker Punch.
Wow. I would almost be curious to see if he could polish that turd. I would really be curious to see if he could what he could do with that. I would actually watch that.
You want to talk about a great conversation, you could check that original Sucker Punch episode out at thefirstrun.com. Just search in the search window there and it should come up. All the archive shows are on there now, as well as a report card and more at thefirstrun.com. Also, check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Do a search for The First Run. Scroll, scroll, scroll. Eventually, you'll see us. Head over to Apple Podcasts. Give us a review. It'll help other people find the show as well. And I guess that is it. So we're going to go ahead, take an extended break. I love you all very much. I think Matt is fond of you as well. And we will see you soon. Take care.